Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everybody. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal, and you are listening to Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Going to talk some Ole Miss and Mississippi State in the program. I am joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer. I'm the Ole Miss beat writer, by the way, and these two teams are going to get after it in a basketball game Saturday afternoon. Logan, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing good. Looking forward to seeing you Saturday. I know people probably think that we see each other every day, but it's pretty rare occasion when we see each other. It's usually either at some type of SEC tournament, SEC media days, or just whenever these two teams meet.
And you know, just a few times a year and exchange Christmas cards,
right,
and that sort of thing. So that's good. But, yeah, we'll get together Saturday afternoon. Hey, folks, before we get too far into things, I want to remind you about some other very good podcasts that you can find from the Daily Journal as you search for your podcast. One is Prep Rally. Happens every Wednesday afternoon. All things high school sports with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps. And the other is The Memo, our news podcast, all things Northeast Mississippi. Join Brad Locke and Derek Russell for that one every week. And also, we are here on Thursdays with Double Coverage, all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss. And let's get right into it, Logan. Really, both of these teams kind of struggling right now for different reasons. I know Mississippi State is eager to pick up that first SEC win under Ben Howland, and the Bulldogs have been close several times, most recently at Florida on Tuesday night, the same night that Ole Miss had an 11-point lead with under 5 minutes to play and lost in overtime 77-74 to number 24 South Carolina, a game that really underscored exactly what Stephon Moody means to this Ole Miss team. Moody continuing to lead the SEC in scoring at about 24 points a game. He went out injured against South Carolina with about 5 minutes left, and it was a different team. It already was a different team for Ole Miss with Sebastian Saiz not playing because of surgery on a detached retina. We're going to get into all these details here in just a little bit, but Logan, start us off with the Bulldogs, man. Take us through the Florida game. You know, what happened? What do you think was kind of the impetus in the Florida comeback? I know Mississippi State was in control for much of that game, had a lead at halftime, and was unable to close it out.
Yeah, and just like Ole Miss, Mississippi State also let an 11-point lead slip away in the second half. It was a little earlier when that lead started to dissipate a little bit. But Mississippi State was in foul trouble with their bigs most of the night. Gavin Ware picked up two quick fouls early in that game, sat most of the first half. Really wasn't a major factor in that ball game. He ended up with, I think he ended up with 5 points and one rebound in that game, only played 15 minutes. And that's the first time this year that Gavin Ware has not scored in double figures. And boy, was there a game that they needed him to score double figures. That was it. They ended up losing that game. Let's see if I find the score here. 81-78. So it was a tight ball game right there to the very end. Mississippi State had to make a couple of fouls down the stretch to try to stop the clock. So that's what allowed Florida to get that little bit of separation. But Mississippi State had a chance to win it a couple of times late in that ball game. The last chance was a little runner that IJ Reddy missed in the lane. And IJ Reddy probably played one of his better games during that, especially in the first half. He finished with 20 points in that game. He had most of those. I think he had 16 in the first half. So a huge first half from him really helped, pick up some of the scoring that Gavin Ware left off. But as I mentioned earlier, foul trouble was really bad for Mississippi State. Gavin Ware fouled out of that ball game. Johnny Zappardo fouled out of that ball game. Eric Holman fouled out of that ball game. So, and those are the guys that are all their forwards. Every one of those guys was forwards, and that's it. They don't have any forwards after that. I mean, Travis Daniels, I guess you could say, is a forward. He's played the four most of the season, but he's really a wing player. And, you know, they just didn't have any bigs to get in there and battle with Dorian Finney-Smith and Justin Leon and Igbuno, or I think I'm saying the guy's name right, but he's a load inside. So
well, we'll go ahead and apologize to Mrs. Igbuno because, you know, we're going to butcher a name like that.
Exactly.
And it's, you know, no malice, no bad things intended there. But anyway, those names are tough sometimes, and that's one of the great things about print, Logan, is you only have to spell it.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You can spell it, you can find it. Then you got it right. It's a little bit different when you start speaking out some of the names that we see. Look, one of the first things you said there, man, really caught my attention there, because when these teams go on the road in the SEC, they need to take their best players with them, and they expect a certain production level if they're going to compete and win. And Gavin Ware has been one of State's better players this year. And for him to get in early foul trouble obviously was a big disadvantage for the Bulldogs at Florida. But tell me what, you know, Gavin seems like a different player this year as opposed to last year or the other times I've seen him. Seems like a more consistent player. And in the little bit that I've seen of State on TV, it looks like Gavin is stepping out and hitting that short jump shot a little bit more. Am I in the ballpark on that, or has he always been doing that?
He's always done that, but not to this extent that he is this year. And I think that really just has to do with he's getting the ball more. Ben Howland, in his opening press conference, said that we need to get the ball to Gavin Ware. I mean, that was his big thing, is he only touched the ball, I think, you know, four or five times a game last year. I forget what the average was. He had it averaged out and knew exactly how many touches he got in a game, and it was astounding how few touches he actually got a year ago. So the emphasis was to get the ball inside to him. I mean, he's obviously the guy that's closest to the basket. He's a big guy, 6'9", you know, about 260, so he's got some power inside, and has been, like you said, been able to shoot that little jumper, that little mid-range jumper that's kind of been lost in the art of basketball over the last 10 years, you know, since SportsCenter came around and showing all the dunks. Everybody wants to dunk the ball, but nobody wants to shoot jumpers. It's all dunks and threes nowadays. But Gavin Ware's been able to hit that mid-range jumper and score the ball inside, and he's done really well. And I think it's not necessarily he's picked his game up a lot. He's just getting the ball a whole lot more. And obviously, when he's not on the court like he wasn't down in Gainesville, it really hurts Mississippi State's offense. They've got to rely more on their guards, because after Gavin Ware, that's really all the scoring that they have in the post.
Logan, I've heard a little bit of Mississippi State basketball on the radio driving to some Ole Miss home games recently, and one of the criticisms that I have heard of the Bulldogs from Richard Williams, the former coach who's doing radio now with Jim Ellis, has been of Malik Newman. For all the good things Malik is doing right now, I've heard Richard describe him a couple of times as a guy who's either going to shoot a three or a layup. And when we talk about the mid-range game, that sounds like an area that Malik is still trying to adapt. Where do you see Malik right now in his development? I know the expectations that were around this guy.
I don't see an NBA player, at least not yet. I mean, you see flashes of it every once in a while. I just don't see a ready-made NBA guy. I mean, obviously, he's got talent. You see flashes of it. He's got as smooth of a jumper as you'll ever see, and he moves really well with the crease. He's very fast, you know, and you can see that, you know, why NBA scouts like him. But I don't see a guy that's, oh my God, there's a number, you know, a first round pick in the NBA right there. I don't see it, at least not yet. I mean, obviously he can still develop, but even if he does decide to go one and done, an NBA team's going to have to work with him. He's not going to be a guy that's just going to hop on an NBA floor and produce right away. I mean, he's still got a lot of flaws in his game. One of them's from the free throw line. He's not been a great free throw shooter. He's been on the line a couple of times this year down the stretch in clutch situations where he needed to hit free throws, and he hasn't done that. But he's still playing really, really well. He's actually getting better as the season's going on. I think the turf toe injury in the preseason that kept him out for about a month really hurt him. He just didn't have that preseason prep time that a lot of players did have. So he's kind of had to, I guess, improve on the fly, you know, kind of get adjusted to college basketball, get back into basketball shape as the season had already started. So I think that's why you're kind of seeing him continue to improve. And you see that with a lot of freshmen. I mean, they just, you know, they're used to being the guy in high school. And obviously he was the best player in the state of Mississippi in high school throughout his career. I mean, four state championships down there at Callaway, but you know, college basketball, especially in the SEC, is a different story. So I think he's time to adjust to that. And Richard Williams is right. He does jack up a lot of threes, you know, and a lot of those shots rim out. I mean, it's not like he's taking ill-advised threes. I mean, a lot of those are right on point, but he's missing more often than he's making right now. And I think he, as the point guard, he's got to move the ball around a little bit more, and that's something he's done a little bit more in the last few games, but still probably way too many threes for my liking anyway. I'd like to see him distribute the ball a little bit more, maybe even drive to the lane, try to get to the basket.
Well, I covered Richard Williams the last few years for Richard there when I was the MSU beat writer, Logan, and it seems to me that Richard has really mellowed as a member of the media. I never thought I would have said that back in the mid and late 90s when Richard could really wear out people in a press conference, but he seems to be a kinder, gentler Richard Williams at this stage of his life and his involvement around basketball. So anyway, Ole Miss and State tipping it off at 1 o'clock Saturday at Humphrey Coliseum. It's an SEC Network television game. Logan, I'm thrilled to have some daytime basketball for the Rebels. They've been a pretty consistent night team here in the early part of the conference schedule. I want to talk about Ole Miss here in just a second, but tell me, what do you think State has to do in this game to get over the hump at the hump?
I'm not real sure. I mean, this team's played awful well in the SEC play so far, and they've got an 0-5 record to show for it. I mean, they've been in every single ball game. They switched to a man-to-man defense kind of late in that Tennessee game and stuck with it throughout the whole time in Florida. For the last probably month and a half, Mississippi State's played all zone, and they tried to Ben Howland thought that playing zone would help them stay out of foul trouble, especially down low in the post. And it's sort of done that, but teams have shot extremely well from three-point range against them, against that zone. So switching to man-to-man seemed like it helped them. That the team actually wanted to go back to man-to-man. That's kind of what they're used to, and it's kind of what Ben Howland believes in. He hated playing zone anyway, so he was much appreciative to go back to man. And I think that they've got to keep the three, you know, defend the three-point line, obviously, and that's something even Florida shot a lot of three-pointers against them. And they've got to keep Gavin Ware out of foul trouble. I mean, they've got to keep him on the floor. He's their leading scorer, leading rebounder, and pretty much all the big post players that they have. So they've got to figure out a way to keep him on the floor and also defend the three-point line. You can't pick up any silly fouls. So I think that's some of the things they've got to do down the stretch. And they've got to figure out how to win. I mean, that's the thing. This team has been in every ball game, but they don't know how to win. 3 years of losing under Rick Ray has kind of caught up with them. They just don't know how to finish out a game, and they've got to figure it out on the fly.
Well, tell you what, the Rebels are in the midst of a three-game losing streak right now, really for different reasons, these three losses. The first two at home against Florida, at LSU last Wednesday, then at home against Florida on the Saturday in the return of Michael White to Ole Miss. White spent 11 years at Ole Miss as a player first and then as an assistant coach later, now the head coach at Florida. He led a Florida team into the pavilion at Ole Miss that had not been shooting the ball very well and just lit up the Rebels in the first half. Going back a few days before, Ole Miss was very competitive against a very talented LSU team in Baton Rouge and was in position to win, had the lead until much of the second half, but allowed LSU to shoot 70.8%. from the field in the second half of that game. Now, Ben Simmons played a lot in that game, the big freshman. He didn't play a lot in the first half because of foul trouble, but he was on the field much more. He was on the court much more in the second half. And when he was, the Tigers were much more aggressive. And you hear coaches all the time talk about spacing on the floor and the spacing that is created when you have to account for that one special player. And, of course, Ole Miss was having to account for Ben Simmons, and that was creating a lot of open looks for the Tigers, and they were knocking it down with different players. So you can't let a team shoot 70.8% in a half. Four out of five Dennis surveyed, Logan, say that when one team does that, they're fixing to win the game, and that's what happened. Then you come to the Oxford game. White's return to Ole Miss at the Pavilion, their third game at the Pavilion. They had won the first two, had the Rebels. And a Florida team that was last and is still last in the SEC in field goal percentage shoots 62.1% in the first half, and the Gators built a 19-point lead at halftime. And that was just too much to overcome. Ole Miss held Florida to 30% shooting in the second half and outscored the Gators by 10. But, you know, do the math. I mean, you still lose by 9. You can't have a lapse that large for that long in an SEC game and expect to overcome it. You know, so that takes care of those two losses there for Ole Miss back-to-back. Then they come against a South Carolina team, Logan, that on paper, you know, you see a lot of wins, and you see a team that you know, was 16-1 and was off to a good SEC start at 3-1. But then you look at that strength of schedule, and they were at about 229 going into the Ole Miss game. And I'll tell you, Logan, I didn't see anything from the Gamecocks that was really special. I saw an Ole Miss team that already went into that game without Sebastian Saiz, the Rebels' number two scorer. Now, this is a team that doesn't have a lot of offensive talent. They have a very special talent in Stephon Moody when he's healthy. We're going to talk more about him in a moment. But they don't have a great depth of scoring. So you take the number two scorer away from that team, and you're also taking away the number two rebounder in the SEC. Kennedy, with a thin rotation already, was pretty limited as to what he could do defensively in that game. You know, he went the entire game without a single possession of man defense, and that's highly unusual. I mean, in fact, he could not remember the last time he had done that. But that's what the absence of Saiz meant for Ole Miss, and Saiz is not expected to play, you know, against State on Saturday. But even without that, you know, I thought Kennedy did a good coaching job, and I thought that there was more effort defensively. I thought the Rebels were active in the zone, and South Carolina missed a few open looks, but there were a lot of contested shots. Most of those shots were contested. The Gamecocks shot under 40% in the first half, and Ole Miss built a halftime advantage of about 10, I believe, something the Rebels had not managed in their first two games in the Pavilion at Ole Miss. They had not led at halftime. They had come back to win both of their first two games, but they had not led. Well, this time they played better defense in the first half than they did against Florida in that third game in the Pavilion. So they get the halftime lead, and they hold it most of the second half. But I'll tell you, when Stephon Moody went out, Logan, with about 5 minutes left in regulation, it was a different team. It was a team in disarray on offense. This is not surprising. I mean, you look at the numbers, you see the minutes, you see the shots taken. You know what Stephon Moody means to this Ole Miss team. And when he left the game, you know, they left, you know, their offensive confidence went with him. You know, it would have been easier, let me say, had they had Saiz, because at least then there would have been more of a leader, somebody to step up and say, okay, it's on me right now, throw the ball to the post, we're going to get a bucket down here. That wasn't the case. Saiz was out already. You take Moody away, and there was just a lot of confidence lost for Ole Miss on offense, and the Rebels really missed some opportunities in the paint, missed some chances to score. And look, when you're tied at the end of regulation, any single bucket, any single play made wins the game for you. And the Rebels had opportunities down low in the paint, had opportunities at the free throw line, and did not get that done against South Carolina. They end up you know, they're tied at regulation. They end up losing 77-74. So we don't know exactly, as we produce this podcast, what the status is for Stephon Moody regarding the Mississippi State game. Andy Kennedy was hopeful after the South Carolina game that Moody's injury was only a stretched hamstring, a strained one perhaps, but not a tear. Now, here's the thing, Logan, if you know how hamstrings work, you've been around them enough. It may be that Stephon Moody is cleared to play, okay? But playing is one thing, and playing with the effectiveness that Stephon Moody himself and Ole Miss fans have come to expect, that's quite another. Because, you know, Moody played in you know, in the late minutes of regulation and played some in overtime against South Carolina, but he was clearly in pain. He was clearly a different player with that hamstring bothering him. And if he's not at full strength, or if he's not at enough strength to do the things that he needs to do to get to the rim, it's going to be a frustrating day for Stephon Moody. It's going to be a different Ole Miss team, because, you know, Moody is their guy. He's their scorer. You know, State fans will remember him going 8-for-12 from three-point range and leading Ole Miss to a rare Humphrey Coliseum win last year. Well, you know, he's got that same type of three-point capability this year, but so much of what makes him effective is his ability to beat defenders off the dribble and get to the rim. And, you know, he's a small guy, Logan. He's about 5'10", 5'9", but he's different than Chris Warren. You remember Chris Warren. Chris Warren could beat a guy off the dribble, but it was all about speed, and he just wasn't quite as big, quite as thick as Moody is. When Chris Warren would get to the rim, you know, he'd finish a lot of the time, but you know, he was also prone to be going so fast that he didn't have good body control or good control of his shot when he actually got up to the glass. Moody is a thicker guy. When he beats the first man off the dribble, you know, he's got that upper body strength to withstand contact a little bit better, and that helps him be a better player at the rim than Chris Warren was. Very explosive athlete, Logan, and for that, you got to have a good hamstring.
Yeah, and it's important for a guy, because Moody's not a guy, like you said, he's not the biggest guy in the world, so he's not going to still be able to go out there and beat you with his physicality. I mean, he's a guy that does rely a lot on his speed to create a lot of his shots. And the good thing is he can still shoot that three-pointer. If they can find a set and get him the ball out there on the perimeter, he's still deadly from out there, and that's kind of been Mississippi State's Achilles heel. So even if that bad hammy is still messing with him, he can still get out there on the three-point line and shoot from out there, and, like I said, still be effective for Ole Miss. That'd be something to keep an eye on Saturday.
It does. It does put some pressure on State, whether Moody is 100% or not, to guard the three-point line. Now, Ole Miss doesn't have an array of three-point shooters. Anthony Perez stepped up against South Carolina and was 4-for-4 from three in the first half, and that was a big reason the Rebels had that lead at the intermission. But that's not been the calling card for Perez for his career. He's not shown that kind of consistency. He's a guy that can sometimes hit that shot, and Andy Kennedy wants his shooters to take the shot. You know, we've seen that throughout the careers of different players there. Marshall Henderson always had the green light. Tomas Giello always has the green light right now. The post-grad transfer from Liberty will take the three-point shot, but he was just 2-for-9 from the floor against South Carolina. So not a lot of depth in terms of three-point shooters for Ole Miss, but they got a great chance to knock one down if it's Moody taking it. So we'll see how the hamstring plays out for Stephon Moody, if he is even available for the Mississippi State game on Saturday. And you'll be able to find that out at djournal.com, folks, whenever we have that information. We certainly will pass it along. A little football news, Logan, before we go. Ole Miss and Baylor are in talks for a neutral site football game for 2020. It would be in Houston. This kind of coming out late Wednesday, and you know, getting kind of a lot of a ride on social media right now. It would be a very interesting game. I'll tell you this about the neutral site games, and I know that State played Oklahoma State a couple of years ago to open the season. there in Houston. The neutral site games are fine, and it's one avenue that SEC ADs are taking right now, and ADs of many conferences, to fulfill the mandates that the different conferences are handing down, that their members play at least one Power 5 non-conference opponent. This is a way to do that, and it's a lot easier for these ADs to agree on one football game than on two, and to fit two on a schedule. So you're seeing more of these. The bad news for State and Ole Miss, as far as the neutral site games go, is they're going to almost always be the visiting team.
Right.
You know, the neutral site game always has that unofficial home team. Like, Baylor will have more fans in Houston than Ole Miss will. Florida State will have more fans in Orlando this season, kicking off the 2016 season, than Ole Miss will. You know, Ole Miss had more fans than Boise State in Atlanta, but you just about have to go to Atlanta before there would be any kind of home field advantage, I guess, in a neutral site game for State or Ole Miss. They just don't have the big venues nearby, I guess, unless New Orleans wants to get into the neutral site game business. Yeah, I think of the Liberty Bowl, and I don't see investors running to put a game there. So.
No.
Anyway, that is something to think about on the neutral site games. What do you think?
Yeah, in Atlanta's from where I'm at in the state, I mean, Atlanta's actually the closest one. I mean, New Orleans is pretty close as well, but Nashville is another possibility. But like I said, Memphis, you've covered games at the Liberty Bowl. It's awful, especially from a press perspective, because if you don't get the right seat up there in the press box, you're looking at a pole most of the game. There was one game I covered from up there. I could see the 20-yard line, the 10-yard line, and the end zone, and that was all of the field that I could see. I actually had to watch most of the game on TV.
Yeah, we need some liberty from the Liberty Bowl. Free us from the Liberty Bowl. But anyway, hey, folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Be sure to look for Prep Rally with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps, and The Memo with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, where you look for your podcast. Lots of good things there with high school sports talk and news talk from the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. And we'll be back with you next Thursday, Logan and I, for Double Coverage. Come back then and be a part of the show.